What motivates people to do what they do?
You know, in my darkest moments, that's what he shared with me. And then 2 months later, you know, my drinking increased and I took that out on someone else who most definitely didn't deserve it.
How do they inspire others?
My dream growing up was to be a running back for the Denver Broncos.
And live their best life. You're about to find out all of that and more with Andy Brooks and her guests in her podcast, Under the Covers with Andy Brooks. In each episode, you'll go beneath the surface with Andy and a special guest to learn more about their lives. Thanks for getting cozy with us.
Former UW football player, former Denver Broncos player, a recovering alcoholic. Monte Ball, you have been through a lot, highs and lows, and your story is incredibly inspiring, and I'm so excited to have you share it here on Under the Covers with Andy Brooks. What was life like growing up as Monte Ball?
Growing up as Monte? Well, you know, I was born in Kansas, moved from there when I was 2 years old into Wentzville, Missouri with my family. Older sister, and I have a younger sister. My younger sister wasn't born until I was age 9. So that was a difficult transition because I was the youngest and everyone came over to the house to see me. And then, and then when she was born, I was a little jealous, so mature. But grew up in a, you know, two-parent household. My parents met each other when they were 15. Still together today.
That's
so actually
incredible.
I actually had a pretty fortunate childhood. Then, yeah, you know, high school football, you know, kind of was my way, you know, to a better life, which I had a great life, but I always wanted to. My dream growing up was to be a running back for the Denver Broncos. That was my dream. That's what I told my father when I was 8. And my father always told me, you know, if you have a backup plan, you've already failed. Already failed your first plan. And that just stuck with me all throughout when I was growing up, which may be, you know, a bit weird to say now, but it kind of made me focus on my number one plan. That was my plan growing up, and I really worked extremely hard to be running for the Broncos. So, but one step after another, you know, I was fortunate enough to be granted offers, full ride scholarship offers, and I narrowed it down between Stanford, Iowa, and Wisconsin. I took some official visits to Iowa, but then I took one here to Wisconsin, and I was sold.
What sold
I even,
you?
It was before I even took off to Cali, and I was like, man, I got to get out there to Cali, take the official visit. But what sold me here was it was a night game against Ohio State. And just the environment, the people, just the feeling. I was like, okay, this is a place for me. This is where I want to go. It seems like a good place. So I was like, I looked at my parents. They didn't like it because it was freezing. It was like in December. And it was actually snowy, too. There was like 6 inches of snow. But I was like, I'm sold. I was like, I'm sold. So I told them I'm going to take the, accept the offer. And I did. And college football was college football. A lot of ups and downs for me. Many more ups, of course. But I guess to share a little bit about, you know, what most people may not know, because obviously you can Google my stats, you can Google, you know, how well I played in football, but it was tough. It was challenging because, you know, you're at such an impressionable stage in your life, 18 years old and already being like, in a way, the face of a program and just living a fast track life and trying to keep up with like social media trends, trying to make everyone happy, but also trying to live the life of a kid. Was tough. It was tough. You know, I was constantly, you know, I felt like I was constantly judged. You know, I drank in college, of course, so I always felt like, you know, if I were to go out and get a beer or something, people would judge me even though they're there drinking beer as well. So it was always tough to kind of like, in a way, I kind of felt like I was living a double life. I had to be this goody two shoes, face the program, but I'm like, man, but I want to be a kid. I want to party.
I want to
let me go out there and make a few mistakes, you know, not any crazy ones, of course, but, you know, I got to learn. So that was always challenging for me because, you know, there's really no one to share that with because a lot of people don't really understand, you know, a lot of people can't really relate to being, you know, I'm not tooting my own horn, but a Heisman finalist, you know, having your face on the bus or
it's
anything like that. I'm like, I really didn't have anyone to share that with. Even my family didn't really understand it much, and that's too personal. That's too emotional to talk to your mother or your father about that stuff because my father's a very stoic individual. It's you know, it's, hide your feelings. Always act like you have all the answers.
Yeah, and I feel like a lot of people may not realize, like, when you're a college athlete at, like, a school like UW, I mean, you're living the life, right? I feel like. Meals, a great place to live at, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, college was a great time. like I said, many ups, many downs. But yeah, there was a lot of fun stuff. That, a lot of stuff that was great. Great relationships I was able to build. And just, you know, living that lifestyle. Mm-hmm. It was fun, but it came with a price.
Yeah.
It came with a price. And me being naive when I was younger, I didn't understand that some of the habits that I was creating, I didn't understand it. You know, I didn't understand that, you know, me drinking 24/7 really is going to be what I fall back on when times actually get hard.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, I kind of segue into, you know, once I took off into the NFL, that's really what I did when I lived in Denver. You know, times were tough. Extremely hard for me in Denver. It's even on a grander scale. You have money, you have, you know, you're working for pretty much the biggest business on the planet, just a money-driven monster, and it's kind of a business like, what have you done for me lately? You know, we're not talking about what you did yesterday or the day before. You have someone trying to take your job now, today. So that pressure of that lack of job security is like literally like the world is on your shoulders. And it's like, okay, if I get cut, because some people were getting cut the next day, you're talking to them, and then the next day you see them cleaning out their locker, wow, trash bag, and then you ask them, like, where are you going to go? They're like, I don't know.
Wow.
I just bought a house, now I gotta, you know, tell my agent that we gotta put my house up on the market, and I'm gonna go try out for another team and be living in a hotel, and then if I get picked up by that team, I'll have mortgage here and like a lease here. So yeah, a bunch of stuff like that that was always on the back of my mind that really stressed me out. But also, you know, just being an alcoholic. You know, I didn't understand that I was one until times got really hard for me, or really bad, I should say. But, you know, my drinking increased even more out there just because I think it was very difficult for me to kind of balance my emotions, to understand, you know, what's going on, you know, with me mentally. So I pretty much derailed. I derailed, and I think my mother kind of saw it happening. It was tough for me. Once I retired, I wanted to retire from the NFL once Denver released me. And my mother and my sister, they were on board. They were like, we don't care. It's just a sport. Like it's, mm-hmm. And for me, it's tough sharing that even to them because I always associated my identity with football. And understanding that it was over, I kind of felt like I was over,
mm-hmm.
in a sense. But they were very comforting. They hugged me. I cried. They cried. And they were like, we don't care. It's just a sport. It's you're 25. You got forever to go. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's true. But I was nervous to share it with my father. And my dad was my head coach growing up all the way till high school. And I became a Broncos fan because he was a Broncos fan. So we had that, mm-hmm. that bond. We had that bond, so I was nervous to share it with him. And I mean, I love my father to death, still do. We must definitely have amended our relationship. But a lot of people don't know my story. You know, right before, you know, I was arrested, it was 2 months prior to that when I shared with my father that I wanted to retire, and we had a huge falling out. You know, he was yelling at me. I was yelling at him. You know, he shared with me that, you know, you're quitting everything. And that really stung. It really hurt because, yeah, I wasn't expecting it. And I love to share now that we're fine. He apologized. Yeah. I apologized. But at the time, you know, in my darkest moments, that's what he shared with me. And then 2 months later, you know, my drinking increased and I took that out on someone else,
mm-hmm.
who most definitely didn't deserve it.
In your darkest times, who did you turn to? I mean, alcohol, but then yeah. Was there someone that you could talk to or no?
Not really. Mm-mm. You know, my mother is my anchor. She's my beacon, excuse me, for sure. But at the time, I still felt like I couldn't really share much with her because, you know, I wanted, I don't know, too emotional.
Make her proud. Yeah.
I didn't ever want to show my parents, you know, out, you know, my weakness.
Yeah.
Which is not necessarily a weakness. It's not a weakness, but it's, you know, I've always been taught, you know, on the football field, don't show your opponent that you sweat, that you bleed. Don't show them any of your weaknesses. And that obviously bled over into my life. So for me, that's what I always kept with me is don't show your weaknesses. So I kind of kept everything in. And, you know, I took that out. I boiled over and I took it out. And, you know, to this day, I always share with people, like, when you're under the influence and when you're addicted to something, you act uncharacteristically.
Mm-hmm.
To this day, I still, know, kick myself in the butt, I still maybe struggle with forgiving myself, because from my childhood until that moment, you know, I've walked a straight line, everything has been going my way, and then boom, something happens that still to this day shocks me. But, you know, from that moment, I've been on a great therapeutic ride, one that's really taught me a lot about my life, taught me a lot about myself, taught me that I have a lot of resilience, that I can overcome a lot.
What kind of therapy did you go through?
Yeah. So it's funny. My sister is a clinical psychologist. She got her master's from Edgewood. So growing up, I mean, I think she diagnosed me with alcoholism at 19, I think. And I'm like, nah, I'm like, stop.
So I'm just in college having fun.
Yeah. So come full circle. When that happened, she referred me somewhere. And, you know, my therapy was great. It was honestly awesome because I had the opportunity to share, you know, all my secrets, you know, with someone, you know, who wasn't a relative, and someone who gets it as well. The person who was my therapist also is a recovering addict. So he got it. So that was a wonderful experience for me because, you know, I felt comfortable. I felt comfortable just being able to go there each week and just talk about anything. And the funny thing is, we only talked about alcohol maybe 10% of the time. 90% was, you know, are you going to retire from football or are you not? Pretty much him helping me understand that football was just a piece of my puzzle, not the entire puzzle of my life. And that is really what opened me up. Like, I was like, oh, wow. I was like, yeah, I'm only 25. I'm like, I got a long ways to go. So I recommend therapy for anyone only because all it is a change in perspective. Mm-hmm. For me, it just changed my perspective of life. And I'm just like, oh, my gosh, wow. Depression is you feel like it's just you. You feel like it's only you. And you feel like what you're thinking is fact. It's not. More times than not, it's not.
And that's so great that you say that because there are a lot of athletes, men and women, that when they get out of college and if they're not going to play professionally, I've seen, you know, they get into that kind of like stump, like, what do I do now? Like, that was my life. Now where do I go? So like, what would you say to them to keep going? I mean, don't get down, you know, sports, it's not just who you are. You've got a lot more for going for yourself.
Right. No, that's such a great point. You know, for me, that's why I've yet to launch, actually, but I sent in my articles of incorporation for my foundation, the Path to Recovery Fund, and it's going to, you know, the hub's going to be here in Wisconsin.
Great.
But it's for athletes across the country and former professional athletes to help them transition from their college sport if their college sport doesn't have a professional level or their professional sport once they're done playing.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and so that's my goal, is to have separate programs in there. I met with the mayor, and he plans to help me out with it as well. But the plan is to have, you know, a program for conflict resolution, which was a huge one for me, obviously. AODA treatment, which obviously right now, we can't obviously say we can provide treatment, but a referral system to allow for them to know of the resources in their area and connect them with that, and a program with meditation. Chris Borland is on my board of directors, so he's really into the meditation stuff, so we're going to do that. And some other programs we're working on. So that's what I would say to someone who right now is struggling with finding their identity, is to find someone to lean on. Find someone to lean on. Go speak to a therapist and, you know, most definitely keep an eye out for my foundation.
Okay, and let's talk too, because now we work together here on the Best Family Broadcasting. So how did you get here at Midwest?
Yeah, how did I get here? you know, my goal, you know, I speak of this freely. My goal, you know, after probation was to move back to Colorado. You know, I was like, you know what, I'll just go back once I take care of these 18 months, I'll be gone. Go back to Colorado. But leading up to my final day, I kind of felt like, you know, I shouldn't run. I shouldn't go hide under a rock. And that Badger Nation has been really supportive of me throughout this entire transition. So I made the decision to stay in Wisconsin like 3 months ago, which is why I'm here at Midwest Family Marketing.
It's great.
Yeah. So my goal is to right now I'm going through some stuff, with, you know, with some family stuff. Mm-hmm. I, you know, want my son to move here, of course, but we'll see.
And then working on the foundation.
Yeah. There's a lot of great stuff going on. The foundation, that's coming along really well.
Great.
Well, my goal is to help out as many athletes as possible because I get it.
You totally. I mean, you've been through it all.
Yeah. My book comes out next year.
Wow, you've got a book too coming.
Yeah, I wrote it front to back. That's what I learned in therapy as well. He could tell that I was struggling to share some stuff, kind of like how I was here earlier. I get a little...
Understandable, yeah.
Anxious, I get nervous. But so he told me just to write. He's like, just write. So I just got to writing, and then like 8 months in, I was like... Whoa.
Here we go.
I was like, wait. So I teamed up with a literary agent here in Madison, and next year in fall, 2019 fall.
I think that's cool. You know, but what do you do now? Like, let's talk about, so this just interests me because I played just 2 years at a community college basketball.
Okay.
But I think it's so cool. Like, what do you do when you get out of these sports to stay in shape? Because you're in great shape. What do you do? Like, do you work out still? Do you still try to work out like you did back in the day?
Right. that's such a great point because I've actually been asking a lot of guys. I'm like, how are you guys staying in shape? Because, you know, we worked out 24/7 every day. I have ever since... You know, really, since competitive. And competitive football, I don't really count Little League football as, like, really competitive. But since, you know, freshman year in high school. So now it's like, I'll work out tomorrow. So I asked them, and they shared with me that they were in the similar boat, similar situation. But what they, you know, decided to do was to train for something. So I'm training for a half marathon.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
First one, obviously.
Yeah, first one. I'm only at mile... Is this mile? I think I'm at mile 4 now.
Okay.
I think. Yeah, so I got a long ways to go. You know, this week is mile 4. Got to run tonight. But, yeah, we'll see.
Well, when is the half?
When is November? Hopefully I can get up to 13 miles.
Yeah.
But so that's what I'm doing. It's actually pretty therapeutic. Yeah. Working back, you know, back to working out and actually training for something because that's what my body knows best.
Yeah, and I think the setting the goal is very interesting because it makes you kind of have that, like that set schedule. You know, mm-hmm. like it keeps you geared to go forward instead of slacking off. Because if you didn't have a goal to work for, right, you just kind of like, oh, I'll do it tomorrow. Oh, I'll do it the next day.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really good point too. That's something I learned in therapy as well, which is to get back to goal setting because you know depression's, you know, one thing that comes with depression is complacency. Accidentally, mm-hmm. you just like, I'm okay, I'm good. So I got back to, you know, setting goals, got back to, you know, doing what I'm familiar doing, which is working out. Oh, I'm going to be in shape for this event. Mm-hmm. Just like being in shape for a game.
Right. Facing your fears. You've never done a half before and you're going to overcome it. It's going to be great.
I'm nervous for it, but it's going to be fun.
Yeah.
Thinking about getting a bunch of the guys to come back and join.
You should.
Get some GoPros and then upload the videos.
You definitely should.
Just online. Yeah.
Okay. So question I want to know, how do you live your best life every day? You wake up. What's like a day in the life of Monte Ball?
a weekday, I wake up, I check my stocks portfolio. I got some stocks and GoPro and Snapchat.
Okay.
That's like literally the first thing I do when I wake up. First thing I do, I look at my phone for that. Set my phone down, get ready for work, of course. But I guess in a nutshell, for me, it's I make sure I work out. I make sure I do something that's gonna, you know, something that's gonna make me sweat, whether it's yoga, even hot yoga.
The best.
Running or I don't know, whatever it is. I play flag football too.
Cool.
Monday nights. So I make sure I get something like that in. But after work, I just make sure that I'm not on my phone as much, that I talk to people more. I get out and talk to people. I get outside my comfort zone, whether it's going to an art class, which I never would do before, but I've done it. And I'm like, oh, wow, it's pretty cool, actually. Go to... you know, orchestra type plays or what have you. I go to that stuff. But, you know, so my typical day from start to finish, it's pretty normal. And then watch stuff about space.
Space? Are you a big fan of space stuff?
Yeah, I like to think outside the box. I don't know. I just, that stuff, I don't know. It just, you know, for me, it's a change of perspective. Yeah. The little stuff that we worry about, the little stuff that we're anxious about, if you really think about it, at times it's really insignificant.
Not important, right? Yeah. Well, I'm excited. So obviously, since we work together, when your foundation is up and running, we should get that out and make sure everyone knows about it, because I'm really excited. I feel, I don't know, I just, like, I love hearing from athletes, because I, you know, was one, and I still love to work out, but I love to hear, like, what a day in the life of an athlete is like, because I think it's motivating and inspiring, and that's why I wanted to talk with you.
Yeah, of course. I, you know, come football season, I watch a lot of Badger football, but other than that, no, I don't watch. I don't really watch NFL games.
No. Is it hard, or why don't you watch too much of it?
I have my own opinions of the business.
Sure.
A lot goes into it that shouldn't, that takes away from the game. And, you know, I have my own, you know, feelings about it as well, how it all played out in, with me in Denver. But, you know, I still support those who watch it, still support those who play it.
Sure.
I just love the college game, the college life. The college football game is way better.
And Badger Nation is the best life.
It is. Yeah, it is. It is. It really is. I had the opportunity last year to go to every single home game and did my first jump around in the stands.
Yeah, because you probably never did that.
Never.
Wow, what did that feel like?
It was my first time actually feeling what people always say. I was like, wow, it feels like it's going to collapse. Like,
I haven't done one myself, I'll tell you.
You have to.
I've got to get to. We always had the games and stuff.
Oh, yeah, right.
Like the game, the tailgates. And by the end of the tailgate, I'm like, I just am exhausted. It's a full day, you know?
Yeah.
But I got to get to a game.
You do. Yeah. Yeah.
And experience that.
Absolutely. Cool. I'll be there.
All right.
Monte, thank you so much for joining me on Under the Covers with Andy Brooks.
Thanks for listening. And make sure you go under the covers with Andy Brooks next week.
In the next episode and final episode of season one of Under the Covers with Andy Brooks, you're going to hear from another podcaster, a teacher turned podcaster, Erin Martin. She's the host of Pink Shade Podcast, and she is going to get us caught up on all reality TV and tell us how she got into the podcasting world.
I have a background in a cult. My parents joined a cult. They married in a cult, and I was born in a cult. I started getting into, being a weekly guest on Jenny McCarthy's show, and then I developed kind of a close relationship with her and her producers.
You know, if you enjoyed this episode of Under the Covers with Andy Brooks, please be sure to subscribe now if you got a quick second, if you haven't already, so you'll get every episode, and share it with your friends if you think they might like it too. You can find my podcast, Under the Covers with Andy Brooks, on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and our today's Q106 mobile app. Thanks so much for hanging.